Just checking with you, so as you say, you've got too many monitors. What are you intending to show us? Because at the moment we're seeing 2203 identity implements WG call summary connection information, etc. Is that what you intend?
Yep, that's what okay. I intended to show. You probably don't want to see all the Slack and Discord and web browsers and stuff that I've got open right now. That'd be too confusing. All right. Well, welcome everyone to the Identity Implementers Working Group call for March 10th. It's been a while since we've met, so thank you for joining. excuse me. On today's call, we'll go over some working group status updates, things that have happened in our industry and that are going on in our industry right now. Purpose of this call is to kind of provide a focal point of things that are happening, along with links out to a variety of news groups and working groups where you can find out all the details you want on those subjects. This call helps you be aware of things that you might have missed because there's so many calls to attend. My name is Steve McCallan, and I'll be your moderator today. And after our review, we'll do that the first half. And then the latter half of the call, we've invited Sam Curran from Indicio to give us a presentation on trusted control channels on the internet. And so we look forward to that. Like all calls, we start off with the Linux antitrust policy. In a nutshell, that basically says that we are all collaborators in the community. We're also maybe competitors in our respective day jobs. And so anything we want to bring and present, and you're encouraged and welcome to share, let's make sure that there's no patent protections or NDAs or anything confidential of that nature. Let's leave that out of the call. But anything that you would like to share with others and collaborate on in the group, you're encouraged to bring that up and share that. And so welcome. Let's start with, let's see, any new visitors? Tim, you were introducing yourself earlier. Welcome. Any first timers or folks that would like to introduce themselves?
That would be me, probably. My name is George Finnett. I'm a little company in South Africa called Banks of Africa's the infrastructure platform, database and technology architect, Michael Mountful. Currently involved in a project called IMZA, basically the business people just use it as digital identity, although it's actually more digital credentials, verifiable credentials. I'm a noob. I started spending a lot of time in YouTube, and Nathan and I actually watched one of your 2020 podcasts earlier, YouTube's earlier today. It was very interesting. Having to ingest a lot of information very quickly, because I'm also responsible for, we act as the glue between the banks in South Africa. So all the banks will transfer money to each other, but it actually goes through us as a utility. And we are expanding to actually look at providing a verifiable credential service to the financial market, but also to telco, to health, and various others.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for sharing that, and welcome to our call. We enjoy having you here. Let's see, anyone else that would like to introduce themselves? All right. Well, I have put a link to the wiki page that you're seeing on the screen. I put a link to that in our chat. Feel free to go to that page, and as you see others doing right here, feel free to add your name and company name, email to our attendees list. That helps us know who's attending our calls and be able to reach out to you should the need arise. And so thank you for signing our attendees list. All right. By way of announcements, first and foremost, I would like to welcome Char Howland. Did I say that right?
It's Char, short for Charlotte.
Okay. All right. Sorry, my bad.
All good.
Welcome to the call today. Char is going to be our a co-moderator here with me. So many things are happening in this industry, and it's hard to keep track of everything. And so she's volunteered to help me co-moderate. And so you'll be hearing from her more in the future. But would you like to take a minute or two and introduce yourself to everyone?
Sure, sure. Thanks, Steve. So my name is Char Howland, and I work as a software engineer at Indicio Tech on the Python team. So I work mainly on the Aries Cloud Agent Python ecosystem, on developing plugins and other purpose-built agents and protocols. I've contributed features, protocols, and testing for our flagship plugin for ACAPI. So I'm involved in the ACAPI user group open source community, and I presented at a Hyperledger Aries workshop in January. In addition to my work on Aries Cloud Agent Python, I've more recently been learning about IndieNode and Plenum to work on the Did Indie Method Specification project. And then outside of my role on the tech team, I lead the Indicio Associates program and have helped establish a mentorship program and training curriculum for associates. And I'm new to moderating a working group, so I welcome feedback and am available if you have any questions or there's suggestions or concerns, and please don't hesitate to reach out if you are interested in presenting, and we can find a call to schedule with your topic. I've really enjoyed attending meetups and community events to learn about different projects in the community, so I'm excited to get involved in this working group and to learn from some great speakers. So thanks for having me here today.
Well, thank you so much, Char. Welcome again, and we look forward to having you in our group. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Let's see, by way of other announcements, the big announcement for our industry is the Internet Identity Workshop. Registration is open. We're meeting in person this time out in Mountain View, California, on the 26th to 28th of April. And so I've provided a link there. You can register for this one, as well as review the proceedings from previous IIWs. I spoke to Phil Windley here recently and asked if they were going to do this remote as well. And at the time he said no. So in person it is. Another announcement, big change is that Hyperledger has moved from Rocket Chat to Discord. And so there's an invitation there. Discord invitations are funny. If it doesn't work, then contact somebody. Sometimes they kind of expire, whereas some are permanent and I don't know the difference. But there is an invitation link so that you can join. And this is everything in Hyperledger, not just this group. This is all the other working groups as well. Cardia Interopathon is a health project from Linux Public Health, and they are having an Interopathon. And so I've put that link there. I didn't make a note of the date, but it's coming up. I believe it's next week. But the link is on that page. Another announcement, we'll probably talk about it in a minute down below, is that the DIDCOM users group, which is a new working group. So the DIDCOM working group over at DIF is intended to define and create the specification of the DIDCOM protocol. And the DIDCOM users group is a new working group where it's more, how do you apply that? How can you use that in practice versus creating the specification? This is more how you use the specification. And that is also set up on Discord. There's a link there on the page. And it's what they call an unsync meeting. So for this meeting, we all get together at 9 o'clock Mountain Time, regardless of wherever you are in the world. And sometimes that's convenient, sometimes it's not. And so with the unsync meeting, what Daniel Hardman is trying to do is see if there's a way where we can say, okay, this 24-hour period, we're having our meeting and everyone can come and go and make notes, work on things, report on progress and so forth, and do it in kind of a decentralized and unsynced kind of method. So that's cool. It's a neat experiment and it seems to be working pretty well so far. Here's one that I put there today. There's a Black Hat webinar. I work a lot in that side of the community, and so Black Hat is something I attend regularly. They have a talk today. It's a free webinar. I put the registration link there. It is in here in just a couple of hours. The title of the talk is Identity as the New Perimeter. And so I thought that was relevant. I don't know much more than that. Haven't seen the presentation, obviously, but it seemed relevant. It's going along with a zero trust architecture. In the old days, once you logged into the VPN, you got inside the corporate firewall, everything was pretty much fair game. And that is changing to where everything needs to be authenticated in, even inside the firewall. And so identity is the catalyst of that security method. And so if you've got a free hour, I've put the link there for you. All right, any other announcements that I might have missed? All righty. Well, we will quickly go, there's a ton that's happened. So we'll skim over a lot of the working group reports so that we can get it done in the allotted time that we can get through them. I wanna make sure we leave time for Sam's presentation at the end. The main identity working group, they took a hiatus for a while and they are active in meeting again. So under each of these headings, these little links right there, those are, I've linked to the meeting notes that they've prepared. And then usually I provide like a little snippet of what's gone on. Their main discussion this time was a presentation by Robert Metwicky of the Human Colossus Foundation talking about microledgers. Did anyone happen to attend that call that would like to give a summary? All right. Let's see here. Sorry, I'm just checking something out. Okay, so basically microledgers are intended to do a lot of things off chain. They can be bound to a chain or not. And so he talked about the origins and applications, how to use it together with a blockchain, also with carry, which is a very big topic in our industry. And I've provided the slides and a meeting recording for that one. Indie contributors meeting, anyone attend that one this week?
I attended that one. I think I can give a brief overview if you like.
Thank you.
So the kind of starting at the bottom, because that's what happened first, they have split the did indie conversation away from the main contributors call, and they have a separate meeting for that starting at I think it's 7:30 Pacific time, going to 8:30, and then the did indie contributors call starts at 8:30 Pacific. So that's a quick note there. The call time has changed a little bit. And so a lot of great conversation is happening on the did indie method work that's being done. Indicio is contributing heavily to that, as is BCGov and a few other community contributors. So work is progressing well on that, I believe. And then the work is also progressing, unfortunately, it seems slowly on building the new indie node stuff for converting to Ubuntu 20.04, but that is progressing. And then there's a there was some brief mention of some of the other work that was happening. That's probably a good overview. If anyone wants to add, go ahead. I think there's a few others here that were on that call.
All right. Well, thank you for that update. Did they, is there a target date for updating the nodes to 2004, or is that still kind of elusive?
That is still elusive. They mentioned on the call, there's only three people working on it right now, and they're going as fast as they can, and it's just taking time.
All right. Good to know. Well, on that note, let's put in a plug for volunteers for the Indie Contributors projects over there. That's a staple of our industry and a good place to get involved and contribute. All right. Sam, I know we've got you at the end. Would you mind giving a quick update on the Aries working group call this week, yesterday?
No problem. We talked about the multiple issuance in the issue protocol version 2.1 and had some good commentary about that. We also talked about some work that I'm beginning, which is attempting to standardize and get started on the process of agent backup and restore. And so I had some good conversation there. That is not yet uploaded, but I'm working on it. Zoom was weird, so it didn't convert right away.
Excellent. We'll look forward to that. Those Zoom links are, and the recordings are usually linked off of the page. So I've got the wiki page linked right there, and then that Zoom link will populate when he gets it uploaded. Any updates from the Bifold group? All righty. Again, I'm kind of watching the time here. I've updated all the links. They had a demonstration and a discussion of the mobile agent test harness. And so there's a link to that project on GitHub. And also they're moving to transition to out-of-band invitations. That is a big change across the board. So you'll see that in a number of working groups is the groups migrate their code bases to include that. Let's see. Cloud Agent Python, if I'm not mistaken, hasn't met for a while. Is that true that they haven't met? I didn't see a wiki page for that updated anyway for this year.
I believe the ACAPI user group has been meeting regularly. We had a meeting on Tuesday, went over open PRs and discussed what should go into the 0.7.4 release, and had a presentation on traction multi-tenant controller for ACAPI with a high-level API by Ian Costanzo.
Okay, so I probably then need to get a better link. I went to this link, and usually I find the subsequent meetings and I didn't see one. So is there a better link that I should be using?
Yeah, I can drop the link in the chat for the most recent call.
Awesome, thank you very much, appreciate that.
Sure.
All right, then I'll make a note of that, and then I can't walk and chew gum at the same time. So I'll add that link into this wiki page after the call. Thanks for dropping that in.
Great.
Let's see, some evolutionary updates that I saw on Aries shared libraries. There's been some new updates. I don't know exactly what's in the particular updates, just that I made a note that the version numbers had changed. And so those are the links for those respective projects. Aries Framework Go. Anyone attend that? So from their notes, they didn't add notes, a whole lot of notes onto that page. They met here recently, but then it looks like they just went over work updates from the previous week. Aries Framework JavaScript looks like made a lot of progress. They're getting ready for the 0.2 release. And these are what you're seeing there are a number of things that are still outstanding that they're trying to get resolved for that release. And I believe that I saw on that page they're targeting next week or so. So that's a lot of work to wrap up in the next week or so. And it'll be in that release. The source links are right there. On the testing tools, the Aries toolbox is still very active, whereas the protocol test suite, it was last updated in July of 19. So just make a note of that for which one you use. The Aries interop info test run status, there's updates on that based on all the different wallets and how they comply with the standard. And so it looks like a lot of those are getting very complete. So feel free to check out that page for wallet code that you might want to use, and it'll tell you how complete it is. Anyone happen to attend the Hyperledger URSA meeting this week? Okay, yeah, me either. One thing I noticed is they've changed their time. And so it used to conflict with the Aries meeting, which I regularly attend. And so I'm not always able to drop in on the URSA call. Plenty of progress there. And I've left their links. Trust over IP has had a number of meetings or steering committee meeting here that was supposed to be yesterday was canceled. And so we'll be meeting again in a couple of weeks. But previously there was a discussion of strategic imperatives for trust over IP on and through this year. And I've added the links for those slides and an agenda as well as the recording. On the all members meeting, I guess I'm saying these out of order. There was a presentation discussion on the design principles review. If any of you are on the chats for Trust Over IP, there are a lot of emails flying around about that and maybe adding another design principle for that. I won't take the time to go over all the groups. All the separate working groups. I've put their updated presentations and links and some summaries in there, but that is a great place to get involved. It's a great cross-section of the industry. For those who haven't been involved in Trust Over IP, whereas groups like DIFF and Hyperledger are geared towards creating the standards, Trust Over IP is more of a governance body where they're concerned about interoperability between layers of the Trust Over IP stack. And so governance principles, essentially. And so there's various working groups talking about all the different identity layers and how those will all interoperate together. And so there's a lot of work being done. I'm not doing it justice for time, but I've updated all of these links here so that you can reference the most recent meetings. So Sam, can we call on you again to give an update on the recent DIDCOM meeting?
Sure. We're actively engaged in our sort of final issue burn down there. So there's a number of PRs open under discussion and more tickets to address there. So progress has been good. And any if you're interested, any help, and if you're a member of that group, you've got to be a member for the IPR protection reasons. Your help is appreciated.
Thank you. And I would highly recommend checking out the DIDCOM working group, not just because I helped Sam moderate that group, but because I really believe that this is one of the core, this is the core communication mechanism for all the identity layers. And so go check that out. I've provided reference implementations, links to reference implementations for the DIDCOM standard in various languages and platforms. And so feel free to check that out. And let's see, I mentioned earlier in the call that the DIDCOM users group has started as an unsync meeting. And so we'll be providing more updates as we get that. But right now, if you'd like to click that Discord link and sign up for that chat channel, there's a lot of stuff going on right there. Interoperability group, their recent meeting was canceled and their next meeting is next week, right? Yeah. Over at Sovereign, we met on February 3rd was our last meeting. The one that was supposed to be here recently got pushed off for a couple of weeks for logistics. But over there, we're talking about the status of the Indie Node, Sovereign Node updates, the CI/CD issues, the upgrade to 2004 Ubuntu, and so forth. I will note that the Technical Governance Board and the Steward Council, we've kind of combined meetings a little bit. So both of those are meeting at the same time. We thought there was a bit of duplication of discussion and that combining the meetings would allow a greater number of people to interact. And so that that was helpful. Last item before we move on, I've got a link here for the W3C standard, their credentials working group, DID working group. I've added links to their charter. Their most recent meeting, they're talking about, among other things, about the DID ID method, and then also the DID carry method. And so they do it a little bit differently than we do. They take notes. It looks like by automated transcript, actually, is kind of what it looked like to me. Either that or somebody is very meticulous in their typing. And so you're welcome to go over there. We pull a lot from that group. And so what they do filters its way down to us. A lot of our members here in Hyperledger are participating in that group as well. As far as attending their meetings, everyone's welcome to join or to attend, I guess. Joining the working group has specific requirements. Becoming a member has a variety of requirements. Non-members wanting to contribute, there's a patent policy that you need to comply with. I haven't read that policy, so we participate kind of tangentially in that group, but a lot of good information comes out of there. And so it's worth monitoring if you're unable to participate as a member, but it's a great organization. All right. Well, I kind of raced through that. Are there any questions on anything, any updates that are worthwhile that I might've left out? All right. Well, with that in mind, we have Sam Curran here to talk to us about trusted channels on the internet. Let me go ahead and stop sharing my screen. And Sam, it's all yours.
Awesome. Thanks, Steve. I If you notice differences in titles and stuff, that's not Steve's fault, it's mine. Over the past little bit, I have had a number of very, very similar questions asked me about how DIDCOM applies to the universe. And so this presentation here is designed to address those. And this is the first time I've really gone after this particular topic in quite this way. And so I will likely be sort of refining this and hopefully getting better at sort of including the relevant concepts. There's a big realization that this is based on, and it's the concept of control channels. This is a poorly made diagram to represent the how cell phone towers communicate and coordinate with phones. I went looking for like an actual diagram, and all of them contain so much detail that it was hard to manage. Now, there's some important actual differences. If you go looking up the current cell phone technology, this is more representative of early, where they had frequency division multiplexing. Lots of the control channels now are based on time division multiplexing or other sorts of strategies, but the concept is the same as it applies to our demonstration here today. So the idea here is that a cell tower has a number of voice channels that it can use to communicate with a cell phone when they're on a call. There can be often, of course, more cell phones within a range of a cell tower than are actually making calls. And the coordination about which phone ought to use which channel happens over a control channel. And this is usually a relatively low bandwidth channel that all the phones spend some time talking on in order to make that work. And then over the control channel, when a call is started either by the user with the cell phone themselves or an inbound call, then the control channel is used to designate and set up a voice channel. Now, there's a whole, again, historically, this is true. A whole bunch of newer, fancier things have come online, including the fact that lots of cell towers now and different technologies actually don't dedicate frequencies directly, but use, you know, packetization and other sorts of cool technologies to expand capacity. Again, unimportant for the metaphor that we're drawing here. The control channel ends up being the important bit that like helps stuff actually get done. So there's a number of things that happen over that control channel, obviously. So authentication is one of them. You want to make sure that this is an authenticated SIM that can talk over the particular network. Cell routing, meaning if you're moving from one cell to another, that happens across the control channels. And also call setup and teardown that we already discussed is there. And also SMS is another piece of the... is another piece that kind of snuck in a little later, actually. When SMS started, they were trying to figure out how to stick it in there, and they realized that they had extra bandwidth in the control channel. And so part of the reason why initial text messaging was so length limited is that they needed to make sure that it didn't overly clog up the control channels and could be efficiently delivered across that. And again, lots of stuff have changed with new technology, but the fundamentals still apply in a really useful way. So that's cell phone control channels. The DIDCOM is a really cool parallel here because it provides some really similar things. One of them is not just authentication, but mutual authentication. Both parties get to know who they are. It's interesting that in cell phone technology, one of the tricks that law enforcement will often use is to set up a rogue tower that's pretending to be a tower on a cellular network. And because at least early on, mutual authentication was not a thing in the cell phone network, they often got away with it. And they could pick up lots of information about which phones were there, et cetera. DIDCOM also provides message routing. This is not completely unlike the cellular routing, only it's entirely controlled by the message recipient instead of sort of by a smart network per se. And it also gives us a protocol framework so that things like SMS, if you draw the parallel there, can be created to travel across the control channel that it provides. There's extra though, there's not a one-to-one here. Of course, we get decentralization out of this. This is not reliant on a cell tower per se, but can even be used just with peer-to-peer communication, and you get the same benefits. It is, in fact, secure. And that's really nice. There's of course some security built into cell phone networks now as it's increasing, but that has been an attack vector for folks with SIM cloning and some other things to try and make that actually happen. It's also private. I don't have to rely on something like a cell phone tower in order to relay my messages. In the case of text messaging, at least in the traditional SMS sense, those are not transferred encrypted, and newer technologies have done a better job at that. Another important one is auto-config and feature discovery. And this has some slight analogy to the cell phone network in that they can communicate with the device to figure out what it's capable of, and then often upgrade technology, right? So if you first connect to a cell phone tower, they have a little conversation, and if your phone is capable and the tower is capable, you might end up on a 4G connection, for example, or an LTE connection. And that way it will, sort of figures out what sorts of technologies can be talked there. And this is similar, but far more extensible because of the ability of DIDCOM to support protocols on top of it within the control channel, if we can extend the metaphor a little. So this is the analogous picture a little that I've used frequently to describe DIDCOM and how it actually works. And there's a piece not represented here that I'm going to talk about in a bit that can ride above protocols in a really useful way. But this is the useful bit. Here's Alice and Bob, of course, with their DIDs and DID documents. They can establish a secure communication between them using DIDCOM and then DIDCOM protocols that are developed on top of DIDCOM. This comprises the control channel between Alice and Bob. So I'm asserting here that DIDCOM is the control channel of decentralized identity. And this is a really useful thing. It's not focused on a single transaction, but rather a connection between two parties that have DIDs for as long as that connection is useful. Sometimes that's short, sometimes that's long, but the mechanism provides this ability to have a really useful way of doing this that goes above and beyond what we've got today. Really quick as an aside, the strongest identifier we actually have on the internet today is actually an email address. That is useful, I believe, in part because it provides both a unique identifier and that is provable, but also actually provides communication with the individual that holds it. So if you're a website and you're trying to collect enough information to provide reasonable customer support, an email address as a login is actually a really good way to do that, because it allows both for a provable identity and that even if you have a password, then email addresses are often used for password reset procedures or to regain access to an account. But you can also, of course, send that person an email. And so those fundamental needs of both identity proof and communication are really, really useful. DIDs provide the identity proofing piece of this. And so DIDCOM is not addressing that, but it is addressing the communication side of things. And having the ability to communicate with the owner of a DID is what makes these control channels a reality. So there's two ways that control channels are used. In the cell phone world, you can have it interesting stuff happen within the control channel. That's an analogy there as SMS. And interesting can happen stuff can happen bootstrapped from the control channel, like the designation of a voice channel in the cellular phone example. And this is useful because there's a handful of things that DIDCOM isn't good at and will likely never be good at. And for example, high bandwidth video streaming is one of those things. So here we're all sitting in a Zoom call. And it's unlikely that DIDCOM, at least in the messaging form, will it ever evolve to something that could actually handle the bit transmission and communication that comprises a Zoom call. But what can be useful is the ability to bootstrap into a Zoom call over a trusted control channel. And what that means is that I might, for example, want to talk to Steve or to Nathan or Tim or anyone and or multiples. And I can pass the information about the Zoom call that I want them to join over a DIDCOM channel. And that provides us a couple of benefits. Number one, the information that I send to them is secure and encrypted so that it can't be eavesdropped by other folks. The other thing is that particularly if I'll send them individual links, as they join, I can get some fairly good confidence that the participant list name that says Nathan George actually is Nathan, because the information that asked him to join was transferred over over this mechanism that provides us these assurances. And so there's some transitive trust that can occur between the DIDCOM connection that we have and any credentials that have been passed or other aspects of that relationship and the resulting call that we end up on because one started from the other one. And that's a really useful feature that can help us to extend trusted communication into arenas that it isn't very common yet. There's sometimes that will be via some sort of direct integration, meaning Zoom becomes DID and DIDCOM aware. Sometimes it might be something that is handled out entirely outside of it. For example, the technology exists to dynamically provision a phone number that then I could give to someone and have it ring through to like my actual device number. If I never share my actual device number, I can't, but someone wants to make a phone call, they can ask me for a number they can call me at, and I can provision and return them one that I have temporarily assigned. And because that number has not really been provisioned in advance, when the call comes in, I have a much higher level of assurance that that is from the person who I think it is. And that's a really useful feature. So that bootstrapping can be done in cooperation, or it can actually be done without the knowledge of the thing that is being bootstrapped. And both have some ups and downs, but it's a really useful way of thinking about this. DIDCOM as a trusted secure control channel in this way can give us the ability to increase not just within the DIDCOM channel itself, but other things that can result from that and that come out of it. So what kind of stuff are we talking about? I've waved my hands a lot. There's a bunch of theory. How does this really look like as we apply it to various aspects of things that are on the internet today? So one interesting one is payment and money transfer. Right now, if I'm in real life going to walk up to a restaurant, often they'll have stickers on the window that indicate which credit cards they accept. Sometimes, particularly in smaller towns or out of the way places, there's weird rules about accepting checks or not accepting checks or cash or things like that. They might have situations where they charge an extra fee for using some particular type of money transfer method. So these are conversations that today are left up to us as people to resolve and to figure out. Using DIDCOM as a control channel, if you know my software knows which payment methods I have and the store or the merchant or the other person knows which payment methods they have available, then a quick conversation can both eliminate the possibilities that don't line up at all, but also inform choices about what might be possible with the various requirements that we have. And one of them might be speed. We don't think about this a lot with credit cards, but the speed of actual money transfer, depends kind of a lot, especially when you get into areas like crypto or other things. And having a payment settle fast is a really useful aspect there. Also, what kind of, we talked about fees, but what kind of guarantees does the payment method actually provide? Right, there's times where I'll intentionally use a credit card because of the guarantees offered by the credit card company if I use them as a payment method. And the same thing can be true for various forms of cryptocurrency and other things. And so evaluating these in order to make a selection is a really useful step. And also then passing the associated values. For example, if it's determined that the way to make this work is with Venmo, then I already have Venmo information that my agent is aware of, then it can pass that information over to the other party to facilitate that transfer. And so it's not just telling the user what a good option is, but actually facilitating that actually happening. In this case, none of what I've discussed actually has the money transferring over a DIDCOM protocol, and that's okay. Now, something like that could be invented. But my point here is that the control channel of money transfer is often setting it up and coordinating it. Actually executing the financial transfer can happen in a variety of other payment methods. We don't need all payment methods to become DIDCOMized, if you will, in order to gain the benefit of engaging in it in this way. There's also other things like escrow that can be used for higher value transactions where there's enough of a payment that the buyer and the seller would really like to employ an escrow service in the middle to make sure that things are delivered. That's of course common with things like houses today, but could become a lot more automated and provide benefits even for lower value things, but they're still high enough value to warrant some escrow. So that's an application to money transfer that's interesting. Shipping is an interesting one. What if instead of providing all of my actual generally physical contact details to a merchant, I'm able to have them introduce me to the shipper? I can inform the shipper about where I live and what types of shipping I would like to receive. And then the shipper can provide back to the sender the various costs and options because of information that comes from them as well. When the shipment is actually created, like the box actually has a label stuck on it, the label can be one that does not necessarily reveal to the sender who or where my physical address or the physical destination of the thing is, which means that I as the recipient gain some privacy in that aspect. It also immediately sets up effective recipient communication. So again, the box is not being shipped over at DIDCOM. I don't even know what that means, but coordinating that in a control channel manner allows for some really cool privacy respecting features that could change the way that we think about shipping today. And again, I don't necessarily have to reveal to the merchant where I actually live in order to receive something that is shipped from them. So the metaverse is a big concept. One of the things that's been brought up is that if we have all sorts of metaverse worlds, by the way, I'm saying metaverse worlds because I think saying metaverses is really dumb. So if we have different metaverse worlds that we need to move between, hopefully we don't end up with just one, then it would be really nice to have some common ID elements that actually pass back and forth and exist in common. Not necessarily the same identifier everywhere, but the same identifier mechanism that can enable these things. We've already talked about facilitating payment, but also things like coordinating messaging between players in different worlds if you're trying to meet up in a particular place or things like that. Also, portable reputation is one that kind of matters here, where you might need sort of the trust boost of the control channel of DIDCOM in order to qualify or to land in the right place in the new world that you're joining. Certainly there can be places, if any of you have read Snow Crash by Neal Stephenson, he explores a lot of these interesting concepts. And the reputation one is interesting. In the Black Sun in the book, there's an establishment that not everyone can enter. You have to be of some particular status or have a particular sufficient level of reputation in order to enter the establishment. And there's things like that that are useful here. That can also be true in the form of a code of conduct. If you have, say, a business conference happening inside the metaverse, then having the reputation to enter because of and abide the code of conduct within that virtual event could be a really useful aspect of that. So I put the web last, not because I don't think it's the least important, but I didn't want to get pigeonholed on this particular topic. An obvious thing is logging into various things on the web. But thinking about DIDCOM as a control channel instead of just an authentication mechanism means that you now have a channel, a control channel with that party for future tasks. And so, for example, after I log in, let's say I'm about to commit a high value transaction. Instead of asking the other party to re-authenticate in some manner, an authorization can be requested over this control channel. Did you really mean to order, 10,000 pounds of Cheerios, right? Like that would be an interesting question that they could ask over a secure control channel and then avoid all sorts of the types of fraud that cause problems with the web. And that is, that's also true for what I call offline communications here. There's some ticks around it because offline in a sense doesn't mean that you're not necessarily connected to the internet, but that you're not currently sitting in front of the website currently looking at it. And if you're not doing that, they can still reach out over that control channel to be able to verify certain things. Another interesting aspect of this is user-side storage. We've been kind of playing with this idea that I could have my own solid pod or my own identity hub or something that I want the web service to store my data inside of. So they're going to reach out and look sort of like an external database and read and write stuff there according to permissions. And setting that up or executing that over DIDCOM is a really useful aspect. They could actually just use DIDCOM protocols to transfer data. That might be useful in a smaller sense, or coordinate access to another larger repository. Let's say this is medical information that I have received from an MRI. That's probably large, and I don't really want to shove that inside a DIDCOM message, but I can sure coordinate permission access to it if it exists somewhere else. And so that's a really nice way of putting this together and thinking about the web as a control channel. I really don't want anyone to think that the best thing that we could possibly do is to shove HTTP inside of DIDCOM to make that work. That's totally unnecessary and not a great idea. But what we can do is use DIDCOM as a control channel to bootstrap that trust in the things that the control channel does really well alongside web technologies so that we can both have the best of the web technologies that we have, but also have the best of a trusted control channel that decentralized identity provides through DIDCOM. So let's do this. These are some of the ideas that I've had. I've only talked about a handful of areas and how this actually applies, but this shows up all over the place. I ended up changing my title away from a control channel from the internet to a control channel for decentralized identity. Because what I don't want to do is draw some artificial boundary that says that this is only useful when you're thinking about things from an internet context. Decentralized identity has plenty of uses that, while it may use internet technology at times and in certain forms, the point is not anything to do with the internet, but rather me eating at a restaurant or making a purchase from a local merchant or any sorts of those other things that we don't tend to think of as steeped in the internet. And that type of integration is what I think we need to do in order to add identity as a foundational feature of the internet. Now that's hard because we already have a bunch of stuff on the internet that was grown up without an identity layer. But I think that that using DIDCOM as a control channel in this manner can give it, almost like a dependency injection, can give it to systems that don't necessarily currently have it. And that way we can make this happen even faster and in some cases without direct integration of the systems that we're actually adding trust to. And so that's the summary of my presentation. If you didn't already think that DIDCOM was a useful and important thing in the future, hopefully I've convinced you that it is. And we've got 5 minutes left. Steve, what would you like to do? Do we have time for questions or comments?
Yes, thank you. This is excellent, very thought-provoking. I would just like to add to what you said about the control identity channel. For those that recall back to 2017, there was a company called CoinDash, and they were launching an ICO. And in the first 3 minutes of the call, hackers stole about $7.5 million. And what they did, the attack they made was they went to the CoinDash website and they basically replaced their wallet address with the intended wallet address. And so as everyone was trying to buy coins on this new ICO, they were actually sending money to the hackers, not the CoinDash company. And so this notion of identity shows up in a lot of different ways. And using DIDCOM as a identity channel, an identification channel in this manner, I think is really thought-provoking and has a lot of applications. Thank you very much for presenting. Any questions for Sam? Yes, Nathan.
I really like the reframing of how DIDCOM works. We've had folks look at WebRTC and other protocols that you can launch from DIDCOM in the past. So this feels very familiar to me in a lot of those ways. Sam, what sorts of code changes do you think we most need to try to pursue, or what things would you like us as a community to think about differently or do differently as a result of this philosophy?
I think we need to show people before they understand. I don't think that I'm talking to you guys because this is the community that's already sort of self-selected to be here, right? But to help normal folks understand the impact of this, I think we need to show them. And I think there's two ways we can do that. Number one is we can build systems and protocols that that sort of bootstrap unaware communication off of this. So demonstrate the outside of DIDCOM aspect of this. And that can usually be done without any interaction or cooperation by the party we're trying to influence, right? The second thing is continue our work developing things inside of DIDCOM. There's a lot of focus on credentials, which is excellent because credentials are a really useful piece. But I view credentials as the means, not actually as the end. And I think you do too, but my encouragement there is that we think a little bit more broadly about what the end could be instead of just focusing on the means there. For example, if a company wants to sort of gain credentials of something, why do they want to do so? And what's the end result? Because if we can actually take this integration one step further, besides just presenting a credential, for example, or proving something, then what's the next logical step that can make this actually happen? And so that's what I'm hoping I can, to get Snow Crashy again, plant a mind virus about, is I would like to help and inspire folks to think about the ways that this can be applied to stuff that we already have or new stuff that we're building that give us new muscles that didn't actually have before.
Well, excellent. Sam, thank you so much for the excellent presentation and all of you for participating in the call today. We have actually have another group joining here at the top of the hour. We've got scheduled back to back on this Zoom link. So we're gonna have to end the call and jump off today, but we will be reconvening in 2 weeks' time at this same hour, and I'll send out links through the normal channels. And feel free to take up these discussions on the Discord chats. And thank you all for participating and look forward to seeing you next time.
Thank you all.